All right. It's so good to see everyone here. It feels so full and cozy, and hi to the Zoomies online. So we're going to do our sermon a little differently today. We're actually going to feature a few members of the church and listen to what they have to say about, like, why Blue Ocean. So first we'll have Lisa Ruby come up, then we'll have Paul Sonda come up, and then Stephanie Carpenter after that. And we're also featuring members throughout the sermon series at the beginning of, or right before the sermon. So if you want to pay attention to some of those, they're great. They're like pearls. So here, let me introduce Lisa Ruby, our board president.
Morning. I'm sure a lot of you know me. I've been up here before. I've preached a couple times. But let me just give you a little bit of background, because this is the Why Blue Ocean series. So I think having a little background about me will be useful when I talk about why Blue Ocean for me. So where do I start? I was one of the founding people of the church. I've been coming here for 10 years. We founded the church almost exactly 10 years ago. So happy anniversary to us. Big plug for our anniversary party, which Jen Nelson is taking the lead on organizing. I'm kind of helping her. I'd basically just follow her around. It is February 1st. Mark it on your calendars. We're having a party here. We're very excited about it. Also, speaking of 10-year anniversaries, Emily and Rachel, 10-year anniversary, in case you guys missed it, was October 17th. And I think, did you guys get married at the Mall of America or something like that? Yeah. And the Chapel of Love, not to be confused with the Chapel of Love in Las Vegas. So, yeah, my wife is here, my lovely wife over there. We've been married, I don't know how long we've been married, because we've got married a couple times, but we've been together, yes, so off script. We've been together 18 years, but I was talking to my accountant, and he was looking at my stuff, and he's like, so you've been married before, you're married now. I'm like, I'm gay. It's a complicated question. Yeah, yeah. So yes, but we've been together 18 and a half years, and we have a beautiful dog named Loretta. And so we were one of the founding families. It sounds more prestigious than it is. They came over and started Blue Ocean. But prior to that, we were going to a church down the road, and we left. So a bunch of us left, and pretty much everyone who left has stayed. So we decided to found a church that we wanted to, I guess we call it planting a church, that met our needs and our values. And essentially, we followed Emily and Ken Wilson, our retired pastor. He left as well, and a bunch of us left because we felt like it was somewhere where we were always trying to fit in, but we didn't really belong. And, oh, sorry, I told my wife if I get emotional, I'm going to look at her, and she had to make me laugh, so she's doing a good job. So, and you don't really know, I don't think you can feel what it feels like to know that you didn't belong until you're somewhere where you belong. So we came here, and it was like a weight was lifted off of us. I'm like, nobody cares, nobody cares. And if you come in the room and you care that there's women together, men together, people who have a different type of gender expression, if you care, you're probably not here. So that was my Why Blue Ocean before, right? So, and I'm sure I've given this testimony more than once, hopefully not. But in the beginning, that's what it was. Like, we wanted to belong, and we left the other church, and we came here, and it was like a breath of fresh air. I mean, it was really so life-changing. But as I stand here 10 years later, I had to think about why Blue Ocean now? And so why Blue Ocean now for me is because Blue Ocean shows up. Like, we show up. Like, if we, yeah. It's, I gave a sermon a month or two ago, and it was about leadership skills, and what is the mission? Like, what is the why for each of us, for the church? And part of our why is that we show up. I mean, we feed the hungry, we house the homeless, we comfort people who are in need. Oh my God, that's a song, isn't it? But, but I wanted to be really, really specific. And so I was thinking last night, and I was talking to Lisa about all of these things that we have done. It's a long list, so be patient. We have what I think of are the more traditional, mundane things. We have a meal train, and I'm not diminishing the importance of it, but you sign up for a meal, you bring someone a meal, maybe you don't talk to them, maybe you do, they still appreciate it. You send them a DoorDash gift card if you're an introvert. So if people have babies, if people are sick, if somebody dies, we feed them. But we go beyond that. We've run a monthly soup kitchen at Hope Clinic for, I don't know, over 25 years. So we do that. We've been doing that. People volunteer. We have people retire, drop off, move away, and we fill the slots, and we do that every single month. If you want to be a part of that, you can let Nancy know. We work with Jewish Family Services, which is a local nonprofit that rehomes and helps out immigrant families, and so we've helped out Afghan refugees. But not only did we give money and give furniture and move them in, we had people who went to the airport and picked them up. We had very one-on-one relationships because people in this church show up in very personal ways. We had members of this church who went to deportation hearings in Detroit because we were aware that of the observer effect, that if you had a nonpartisan observer, although we were probably partisan, sit in the courtroom. Just sit there. We don't have to say anything. Just sit there and pay attention. Suddenly, everyone was on their P's and Q's. So it's like, oh, why is this person here? So they got better. People get better treatment in court when there are other people there just to observe. So we went to Detroit. We sat in on deportation hearings. It was painful to watch. It was really emotional. And even though I knew nothing was going to happen to me, I was kind of scared and I was kind of nervous. But we did that. We had members of this church drive individuals without legal status to medical appointments because those individuals were afraid to drive in a car because they were worried about getting pulled over by the police. Drove them to the medical appointment for themselves, for their child, and interpreted for them so their children could get medical care. So, like, this is what we do on an individual basis. We painted someone's house. So way back 10 years ago, one of our congregants, she had a death in the family. Her house needed painting. We said, what a great way to spend a day. We showed up. I don't know. There could have been 25 of us. We were like spider people climbing all over the house, painting the house. Some of us were more skilled than others, but we painted her house. We garden here. So if folks are not aware, Genesis is the organization that runs this whole entity. So there's St. Clair's, Temple Beth Emeth, and us, but Genesis is the overarching organization. And so we have a gardening club, and that's our garden out there, which is looking okay. People show up, they garden. We had people help work on a rain garden, which is on this side of the building. You should go and look at on a 95 degree day when thankfully I couldn't be here. We planted two fig trees that are out there. And then the people who told me who worked on that, they said they have never been sweatier or muddier in their lives. But we did that. So we show up and we produce the things we want to. So during COVID, like, how are we going to show up? We were all of a sudden, like the rest of the world, we were remote. We were virtual. And we pivoted. We went remote. So we created online church. Well, a lot of people went online. So that was good. A lot of people did it. Maybe not as impressive. But what we did, I think more impressively, is when the pandemic eased and we were back in church, we didn't abandon our Zoomies. We said, oh, they're a part of our church. They're just as important as anybody here. They need us and we need them. So we became a hybrid church. How many hybrid churches are there? I don't know. But we showed up for them. Even to the extent that we host a Zoomy weekend now. We've had our third Zoomy weekend, and we've had people here visit some of the Zoomies. So if you're looking for somewhere free to stay, pick the person who has the coolest location, and then maybe befriend them, and you can go see them. On a more personal level for me, when my mother died about a year and a half ago, you guys showed up. Like, people came to her funeral, which is, I don't want to say it's low-hanging fruit. It's hard to go to a funeral in general, but it's kind of easy in the sense that funerals are kind of the same. I'm Jewish, so there was Hebrew in the service. People can just sort of nod along. That's great. But people came to my dad's house, and they sat Shiva. Raise your hand if you know what that is, and I'm not going to call on anybody. So about half of you. People who came were Googling Shiva. They were YouTubing Shiva. They came in and they didn't ask me because it's my mom. They asked somebody who looked like they knew something and said, what's happening now? Where do I sit? Do I need a program? What is appropriate? But didn't stop them from coming. They came and they sat Shiva with my family, and that was showing up. So for me to be a part of an entity that shows up like this, that's my why. That's what brings me. Woo! It brings me back here. Because you guys are family. And when you're here, whether you've been here a long time, whether you're new, this might be your first time, you're like, oh my God, is it always this emotional? We show up, and that's what a church, I want to be in a church that walks the talk. I want to be a church that is not just this building. Like, we don't own the building, right? We pay rent. But some people like go to church. We are the church. We go in the world and we are the church. And that's why I want to be a part of Blue Ocean. So, you know, they say, well, some people say, you know, your family is gravity. Blue Ocean is gravity for me. Thanks. Paul.
Is this working? I still remember the first time these two beautiful women started coming to the vineyard. And there they are. I still get to know them. They're so nice. Anyway, I sound like Donald Trump. No, I hope not. So I'm Paul Sanda. I'm the husband of the lovely Pastor Diane. One of my favorites. I'm the stepfather of the lovely Pastor Caroline. I'm a proud grandfather of 14 grandchildren, some of whom are attending today. And two of my grandchildren are Jewish. So I'm very ecumenical. I'm very ecumenical, and you'll find out why as I tell my faith journey. From the time I was a child, I just sort of thought I was supposed to go to church. My grandmother was in the Altar Guild at a big church downtown Detroit, and what? Like this? Sorry, I don't know. Anyway, and my grandmother was a pretty strong woman, and she told me I should be an altar boy, so I did. I was an altar boy, and, you know, it was kind of fun. You wear stuff. And there were pictures of my dad in the choir at the same church, and I just thought I was supposed to be Episcopal. As the years went by, there was a confirmation class. They do that in Episcopal Church. And I learned a little bit more, and I said, oh, you have to think about this stuff. And at the end of that, we went to a youth retreat, which a lot of kids were older, and they were doing weird stuff, and I was like 13. And at the kind of towards the end of it, I suddenly realized, you know, I didn't know what the proof was that there was a God even. And I went up to this poor woman who was talking to this eighth grader about, what is there really a God? And finally she kind of threw her hands up and said, it's really about faith. Well, that eighth grader was not okay with that. That eighth grader went home and was actually crying in the car because he was so worried about what. Is there a God? I don't think so. I don't know. Anyway, that started me on my 40-plus year journey of yo-yoing in and out of churches and just ending up leaving because I always felt like I was repelled by what I thought was hypocrisy. Well, you know, that was, you know, as I learned when I attended AA, you need to look at yourself, not worry about the hypocrisy of other people. Worry about your own hypocrisy. At any rate, in my late 30s and 40s, I was very successful in a secular way and very miserable in a spiritual way. I had no spiritual, what do you call it? Never mind, I can't remember the word. At any rate, I embarked on starting to read. I went to therapy. I was in a men's group. I was reading all these books, and slowly some of the books touched me. The first one was Joseph Campbell. I don't know how many people know Joseph Campbell. He doesn't believe in a Christian God. In fact, he defines the Christian God, and I love this, as a metaphor for a mystery that transcends human thought. Well, you know, I'm overeducated, right? So that kind of appeals to me. This mystery stuff, I started, mystery, yeah, okay. And one thing he said was that there's this power of myth that has been all through human history. And, and then I kind of coupled that with something I had heard, that we're all born with a small missing piece. It's a God-shaped piece. And we need to kind of seek what that is. And I started thinking, this might be the itch that I keep thinking I need to scratch. Okay, next. Well, so how did I start scratching it? Well, the first thing I found that really touched me was Zen Buddhism. And I was like, really, I would read they call them koans. They're these great stories about the meaning of life, which some people, if you read them, you might think they're trying to tell you there is no meaning. But it meant a lot to me. And I even thought about going to the Zen Buddhist temple, which was on Packard. I was a Christian. I knew I was a Christian. That wasn't going to work. I was trying to figure out what to do, and I found a book called The Tao, that you're supposed to say Tao or Dao, but I listened to it purposely listened to how you're supposed to say it, and it's supposed to be Tao or something, because there's no D in Chinese, just if you're interested. Little side note, you can see I'm overeducated. This book was talking about statements in Taoism and statements of Jesus and how there was a lot of similarities. And I was like, and if you think about it, simply spoken, people talk about Jesus as the way, the truth, and the life. And the definition of Tao is the way. And I was like, it was all starting to come together. And I was finally ready to again explore Christianity, but this time with an acceptance of the messiness, which I wasn't willing to. Moving forward, I met my delightful wife after my first wife died. And she took me to Vineyard in Milan, where I began having some spiritual experiences. And it was very meaningful to me. And I continued to attend there until, as you know, the Blue Ocean split off from Vineyard. So anyway, I want to finish up with why Blue Ocean. First of all, for me, Blue Ocean consistently honors the Christian tradition and scripture, but leaves freedom to explore and learn different lenses with which to view the Bible and other forms of spirituality. And that's rare in church. Secondly, there's great learning experiences here. For me, it's kind of about this crazy notion, what is the meaning of life? And I've learned a lot here. Thirdly, Blue Ocean accepts you as you are, wherever you are on your spiritual path. Black or white, old or young, a strong believer or not so sure, whatever your gender or orientation is. And lastly, most importantly, every Sunday I get to hang out with all you beautiful people.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. Thank you. I am Stephanie Carpenter. My husband, Don, is out there in the congregation with Winnie, with the My Little Pony. We have three kids, Winnie, and then two more downstairs, Aspen and Lyndon. I work for the University of Michigan. We live here in Ann Arbor, and this is kind of my story. So I was born and raised in Amarillo, Texas, Amarillo is, if you're not familiar with it, very conservative politically, religiously. It's a city just kind of plopped down in the middle of the Texas Panhandle. There are a lot of cows, a lot of cowboy boots, a lot of Bibles. I grew up attending church on a weekly basis with my family. I accepted Christ in fifth grade. I was about 9 or 10 years old. And I was baptized before the congregation at my church. There was probably like 1,000 people in attendance. It was a big church. Among my peers, I was probably like one of the last in my grade to be baptized. So to some extent, I chose to be baptized because I felt excluded and kind of late to join the club. But I also believed in Jesus, so it was kind of a mixed reasons there. So the God that I grew up believing in was like a big old white man who sat on a throne in the sky, like quite literally. So I may not have been able to see him, but he could see me. On the cathedral ceiling of our church, some 150 feet up in the air, there was a small, probably about this big, inconspicuous eye that the builders of our church some 80 years before had put up there. It was this beautiful ceiling, and the eye of God was up there. And it was one of those things, some people knew it was up there, and your friends would point it out to you and be like, you see the eye of God up there? I think the architects and the builders put it there to, you know, reassure us. But at the same time, it was to remind us that God is watching over us. He's peeking into our hearts. He's examining our thoughts. And he's assessing the strength of our faith. This was a God that did not tolerate sin and despised doubt. And those who did not believe in him would be sent to hell. The constant gaze of God was also, I think, kind of meant to inspire this obedience in us, his believers. Obedience to authority and uniformity within the group. These values were virtues in that Christian culture, and difference was frowned upon. The unspoken social role that you learned was, we will accept you if you are like us, if you act like us, and if you believe like us. Diverge from this path at your own peril. I still could enjoy going to church. I had some friends there. Youth group was really fun. They made it fun. I was awkward. I still am. And at times, I just felt really kind of odd or precarious in my place there. Like if I wasn't cool enough, like, you know, you could be easily outcast. And then occasionally I would also wonder if I was truly saved or if I had somehow done the prayer wrong or for wrong reasons and if I was actually going to end up in that lake of fire. So I grew up in this environment and became a teenager who nurtured a faith in an omnipotent, omniscient, judgmental, and punitive God who demanded obedience. I really did my best to be good and to be devout. Because of kind of all of this culture of obedience and either or, I just developed those ways of thinking that can be very small and destructive, very like categorical thinking, black or white, catastrophic, and it just kind of bled all into my life. As a result of that, my faith, because of these ways of thinking and understanding about how I was in the church, my faith was very brittle and inflexible. And guess what? It broke. It's going to seem kind of silly and petty, but I was in a car wreck that like kind of messed up my face for a little bit. And the whole thing at that time just seemed so pointless. Like, why would me and my friends have to suffer? And I just couldn't conceive, like, why God would allow something like that to happen. It's like, why didn't he just kill me or whatever? You know, like, why make me just kind of suffer pointlessly? And so the easiest thing for me after that kind of a lot of questioning was to believe that there was no God in control of everything. So I chose to believe in nothing instead. During that time, I met and started dating Don. He has his own testimonial that he could share. He also grew up in a Christian faith tradition and has an interesting story. Don was and is patient, kind, loving. Even as I was becoming kind of more cynical and depressed and more judgmental of Christianity as a whole. He was just kind of a guide star. He embodied and extended grace to others in a way that I really had never been able to, even when I was at the height of my faith and belief in God. Yeah. So during my time of disbelief or unfaith, it was a period of about 17 or 18 years, I met a lot of people and became friends with some who demonstrated what I had been taught were really tremendous and foundational Christian traits: humility, generosity, and unwillingness to judge. And they were demonstrating these in ways that were outside of church, that weren't mandated by a religious institution or authority. And I want to think that these people helped soften me. So I started contemplating a return to church kind of before and during the pandemic, but I was very wary of joining a church like the one I had grown up in. I couldn't return to those beliefs or reignite the faith of my childhood. In fact, the poet Christian Wiman writes that there is no way to return to the faith of your childhood. Not really, not unless you've just woken up from a decades-long literal coma. No, he says, whatever faith you emerge with at the end of your life is going to be not simply affected by that life, but intimately dependent upon it. For faith in God is, in the deepest sense, a faith in life, which means that even the staunchest life of faith is a life of great change. And it follows that if you believe at 50 what you believed at 15, then you have not lived, or you have denied the reality of your life. So I was pretty nervous about visiting any kind of Christian church. It took several years to kind of like wear myself down for fear of being judged and excluded. It was easy to look at churches online and read Google reviews. And in the process of doing that, I kind of found my way to Blue Ocean and was just looking at the website. And who did I see but my neighbor, Lisa Ruby. Keep the photos on there. Okay. All right. It was helpful. I saw her out in the neighborhood walking Loretta shortly after that. Probably had my dog Waylon, the two greats of country music there, out walking together. And I told her I was curious, and she encouraged me, and she was the reason that I felt brave enough to attend. So thank you, Lisa. Yeah. So why did I keep coming back to Blue Ocean? It's because of you all. You accept me and my family and everyone here without any preconditions. You are mission-driven without being patronizing and without assuming that you know better than the people that you would help. You are loving, you are non-judgmental. You're funny, brilliant, welcoming, generous, and kind. And you don't expect uniformity of thought or belief or action. At Blue Ocean, it's wild to think that I could say this, but it feels like it's okay to admit that I don't know who or what God is. A few weeks ago, Elle mentioned that for them, God is love, and that this is also kind of the faith that I am attempting and aspiring to, a faith that love can be bigger and more powerful and more mysterious and surprising than I could ever imagine, a faith and a love that exceeds reason. At Blue Ocean, and I'm happy to say that I can say that my faith includes doubt, what that poet Wiman would call honest or devotional doubt, which is purifying and leads to a durable faith. And I also want my children to grow up in a faith tradition where they know they are recognized, respected, and loved, no matter who they are now or they might be in the future. Although if you were to ask them, I'm sure they would say they like Blue Ocean because of the donuts. So we all have our reasons. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Stephanie. It's really lovely. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, all of you. I know it's hard to get up here and share and be vulnerable, so I appreciate that. I also think that was... it's a kind of a good spectrum of seeing some of the backgrounds that people come from. I know we're running a little late, but I thought I just wanted to wrap up with a couple of thoughts. And it actually came from the sermon Lisa gave in July, where she was talking about leadership and like, what's your why? And I knew immediately what my why was. One was creating healthy community. And that means, like, I know that we sort of self-select for people who would be willing to go to a church with a lesbian lead pastor. And so there's a certain, but within that, I don't want to create a monoculture where everybody has to believe the same thing, where we can have healthy disagreement. I think that's actually really important, which is why we don't have people sign statements of faith. I think that we can come from all kinds of backgrounds and organize around trying to best understand the way of Jesus. And through that, looking at the shared stories and rituals of our background on what Jesus's background was to help inform our path. And so, you know, I'm not looking for a utopia. We're humans. We will not be perfect. But really just trying to create a healthiness to community is important to me. That's, I know both Rachel and I feel really strongly about that. And that we've seen so much of sort of communal organizations break down in our culture. And so creating spaces where we can have that is important. The second why for me was, you know, I'm really interested in, like, reconstruction and building. And, you know, Christianity is kind of going through a big meta-narrative crisis on a larger scale. And there's different responses that we can have when that happens. One is you can kind of pretend it's not happening and really buckle down into, you know, what you believe and not allow any questions. You can just deconstruct to the point of leaving, which can be a healthy response. And I think there's a lot to be said for deconstruction. I've gone through my own. But the thing that drives me is sort of the third option, which is staying and innovating. Just saying, I'm not willing to cede the richness of the Christian tradition, right? And so Phyllis Tickle used to talk about, from Matthew 13, says Jesus said, "Therefore, every teacher of the law who's become a disciple in the kingdom of heaven is like the owner of a house who brings out of his storeroom new treasures as well as old." And that stuck with me for 25 years. Like, there's some old treasures in our tradition that are beautiful, right? Prayer and generosity, all the disciplines, even some of the icons that we preached on last year. Like, there's so many great riches in our tradition. But there's also some ways we can innovate to make it so that it is a little bit more, maybe more relevant for how we worship today. And so those are the things that really drive me. There's three things in Psalm 23 that I think about as sort of a framework for our church. And it's like creating a space for restoring our souls, right? A place where we can come, we can mourn, we can be together, we can experience God. Preparing a feast, meaning like it's an open table for all who want to be included. And then creating pathways of justice, right? For his name's sake, for the sake of God, right? And so it's working toward justice for all. And so those are the big whys for me for Blue Ocean. And yeah, I hear elements of those in Lisa and in Paul and in Stephanie, and I know many of you as well. So thank you for that. I know we've run a little bit long. We often do a meditation, and I just thought it might be interesting to meditate just a little bit on that phrase from the Matthew verse of, like, what are the treasures old and new? Like, what are treasures maybe from, if you grew up in any sort of faith tradition, what treasures do you really cherish, and what treasures are you looking for? And people make noise, but I'll just let us sit with that for a minute.
So Holy Spirit, I ask that you would help us to be gentle and kind with one another, that we can really hold differences with open hands and give each other a whole lot of space as we have just these honest questions in our faith tradition, and as we seek wisdom and as we seek you. And I ask also that you would help us to bear witness to the treasures of our tradition, that would be a space where people can say, wow, love is found in that place, their love for one another, as well as people's love spilling out into the community around them. So help us to continue to build and to reconstruct and hold on to the beauty that's been passed down to us, so that we can just be a light that we can pass down to our kids and to their kids' kids. I refuse to cede the beauty. So Lord, help us to be good caretakers of that and stewards. Amen.